Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Do you know that you can't get Silent Hill 1 on PS1 in a case for less than 50 English pounds these days? If you want just the disc and maybe the manual, you can maybe get 25 if you're bidding all the time, but even then it's too difficult.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Now, I hazard to say that only Mr. Ben Roy is the one fighting the good fight for Silent Hill representation in 2022. But what have you been doing? There's a lot of games coming out. Where have you been?
Who are you asking here, Josh?
Mr. Ben Roy. No. I want to know what's happening with this Silent Hill.
I haven't played a game like newer than 20 years old for like 2 months now, bar Halo Online and some other online stuff with friends. But I'm lost in the trees. I'm almost there now. So, I said Silent Hill Forbidden West. Horizon Forbidden West has arrived. I can't wait to play something brand
Crossfire
new.
Crossfire X is out. I mean, they're all there. Mate.
I saw the reviews, and then I saw you had to pay like an extra couple of quid for the campaigns, and then I deleted it straight away before launching it. And that Rainbow Six Extraction.
That's not a game. That's
just not worth me and my friend's time, really. No.
But overall, we're going to check in more game-specific stuff next week, because a lot more, Josh will play a lot more Horizon. Ben Roy, you'll have played some Horizon. I've already finished it. The review's on the channel. But we'll touch in on that stuff going forward. We'll do a spoiler pod when you guys have both finished the story as well. Because there is a lot of stuff doing the round. Cyberpunk's massive update dropped yesterday. We've just got a video going out on the channel today, as I literally played that for my entire day off yesterday. I had plans. They went out the window. I didn't do anything else other than just play Cyberpunk. And I massively recommend the latest update for that game. It's phenomenal. Literally feels like what they should have had out 2 years ago, and is backed up by the devs saying that they always needed this amount of time. Anyway, and Sifu. Sifu is another game that's phenomenal. We've got a good chunk of coverage across the podcast and the channel and everything. So we'll talk about some big old news stuff, because there's a lot of gaming news doing the rounds. And if we have time, we'll circle back around to the games. But like I say, go check out the YouTube channel for hands-on stuff for them as well. First big news story, though, is the Capcom countdown. Now, they tweeted out saying that on the 21st of February, they were going to be revealing a bunch of stuff. And so on the Twitter, they tweeted out this link that went to a website that showed a countdown to that date. But people have since data mined the website itself and found what is apparently going to be revealed. However, a good chunk of the fandom thinks it's too good to be true, because listed in this data mine are just brand names. But it's, so it could be whatever game you want to associate with this. But it's Resident Evil, Street Fighter, Devil May Cry, and Mega Man. So whether or not that is, you know, why Capcom are doing their first big public countdown thing in a while, I don't know. But Ben Roy, you're a massive Capcom fan. What do you think this is?
I mean, I hope it's something more substantial than an update to a website that some hardcore fans use that we had the other day. You could do a little like 2 second stinger with just Leon turning up to, you know, a village of some kind.
I was gonna say, do you think it's the remake, the RE4 remake?
I would say either that is more likely. But then what, you got a village DLC that's been like rumored for since they and they mined 7 for DLC as much as hard as they could. They could do a village what we call it, VR.
And very true.
There's always people wanting that, you know, the first 3 PS1 games just in their PS1-ness on newer systems, you know what I mean? So it could be that sort of thing, the collection.
I would take that. I would love the original Resident Evil 2, just polished up a little bit. Just give me that. But Josh Brown, what do you think?
Dude, I think Capcom's in such a weird position because, like, they're doing so well. You know, they just announced their how well they did last year. And, you know, Resident Evil's selling well, Monster Hunter's selling well. All of their properties are, like, doing gangbusters. But they haven't had, like, a big reveal in a long, long time. They had, like, quite a quiet year last year where they just kind of announced, you know, updates for these games or re-releases and stuff like that. So my hope is that what you've read out there, Scott, isn't misdirection, isn't too good to be true. And they do have a lot of announcements planned to get us hype for this year, because they don't really have anything on the docket for this year or going into next year at this moment in time. So for me, I want to see a big all-out Resident Evil blowout, essentially. I want to see Resident Evil 4 Remake at least get teased. I want to see Resident Evil 8 DLC, and I definitely want to see Resident Evil 8 VR announced for PSVR 2. I want that to be a thing that I look forward to for the PSVR 2 launch date.
I do wonder how much they are going to try and position themselves as, you know, like you know, the latest Nintendo Direct, like, you know, you can argue that it didn't have, like, tons of stuff in it, but someone like me, absolute simp for Kirby, was losing his mind. So I kind of wonder how much the likes of Capcom, you know, have enough announcements, like, queued up, and they maybe sit on them for a while so they can do a live stream and build up the idea of a Capcom live stream being a thing. Because we're seeing way more Nintendo Direct-style approaches to content reveals. Even Yacht Club did one, the Shovel Knight devs, because they have a bunch of things that they're publishing or developing. And so I kind of hope that it is a big deal. Like, I hope that they haven't done the big, you know, they've announced the countdown that, like, it was a week in advance or whatever. I hope it's, I'm going to assume that it's Resident Evil 4 Remake. I assume it's Street Fighter 6 because it's been a long time since Street Fighter 5. Some sort of Devil May Cry follow-up, but I don't think it'll be DMC 6. I just think that they'll do something else with that engine. Maybe some DLC they'll give another character or something. And then I guess a new Mega Man, but I forget what number they're on, but maybe a Mega Man for the new age, because that franchise went away, and then Mighty Number 9
14 or something
came out. Yeah, there's like 40 or 50 or something. So I think it'll be a big deal. I hope it's not just, you know, Capcom reminding the shareholders that there's stuff coming. I hope it's got a bit more to it.
Well, this is it, because it's coming straight after they did their, you know, report on the year, and the fact that it's coming towards the end of the financial year, you know, I think that ends at the end of March. To me, and I hope this is going to be a way for them to bolster their next financial year calendar from, you know, this April to next March or wherever it is, and give us, the fans and shareholders, you know, confidence that they've got stuff on the horizon to match next year's profit, last year's profits. I mean,
because maybe it's just because we've been through 2 years of a literal void, but it feels like Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes were a lifetime ago. Like, it feels like there was a bit of momentum between 2 and 3, and then they sort of dropped off. And, like, maybe now is the time that you remind the world that Resident Evil 4 is a thing again, and you roll out, and if all the leaks were correct, then they can reveal, like, the new version of the intro or whatever, and it all takes place at night and do all those kind of things. There's a way to do it.
Well, I mean, you know, they said that they wanted a Resident Evil every year, and this year they have Resident Evil Reverse, you know, that multiplayer gimmick that they've got. But to me, in my head, there's no way that they can be banking on that being the big Resident Evil game for this year. So they've got to have, in my opinion, something else up their sleeve.
In terms of Benro, what do you think? You get your Capcom, you can reveal one Resident Evil for 2022. What is it?
I would do the 4 stuff. You just need some sort of, like, maybe an engine thing, or just even CGI thing of Leon turning up, looking into the village or something like that. Or just have Dr. Salvador come along with his chainsaw and that's all you need. You don't want Reverse. I played that when it was in its, like, beta.
Forgot that had a limited release.
100 years ago, and it was horribly imbalanced, but weird. Mm-hmm. It was like, slap some sort of action figures together. And I think you save village stuff for I think they should do a VR version of Village, because why not? Save it for nearer when the PSVR 2 is coming, so the momentum is all sort of, like, rolling like a boulder being punched by Chris Redfield
into a lovely pool of lava. Yeah, I think if they queue up, and I forgot about that whole Resident Evil 1 a year thing, but if they are positioning themselves to be almost like a first party direct showcase thing, then they could, you know, they have enough stuff in the fire that they could sort of start announcing and then get back on that plan and recover from the last couple of years. Next story is Tom Tenders Henderson over on xfire.com talking about what was happening on the inside of EA in regards to Battlefield 2042's, I was going to say downfall, but just continued falling down a hill, spinning, pirouetting, hitting every tree possible on the way down. Because EA had an internal, apparently their internal executives had a whole conversation about what happened with Battlefield 2042, including one of the executives, Laura Meal, who has pointed the finger a little bit at Halo Infinite. And to quote Tenders himself over on xfire.com, according to Meal, the comparison between both games was not favorable because Halo Infinite was a very polished title, whereas Battlefield 2042 contained bugs and wasn't as polished. EA also referred to Halo Infinite's multiplayer as a surprise, something that they didn't expect to take away from Battlefield 2042's release. But overall, and obviously considering the fact that this game launched in a pretty horrendous state, a lot of people are just sort of laughing or feeling sad or disappointed or whatever at the overall state of this game. Josh, you're the biggest Battlefield fan out of all of us. What do you think?
Totally, man. It's like a mixed bag, all of this, for me, because when the game came out, I actually like quite championed it. You know, I thought it obviously wasn't perfect. It had a lot of issues, but I was having fun with it. You know, I spent like 60 plus hours in there, you know, enjoying it, looking forward to new updates, looking forward to more content. But with the recent announcement that we're not going to get season one until summer, when it was supposed to be out at the start of the year, it's made me feel like a little bit of a mug, to be honest, because I'm like, well, all of this content was promised, now it's being delayed, and that's been responded to in kind by, you know, 150,000 people, whatever it is, signing signatures to demand refunds. So looking at this kind of postmortem and seeing, you know, them compare it to Halo, which for all intents and purposes, while that might have been lacking in the live service area, absolutely delivered when it came to the core, you know, combat, the maps, the game.
It's got
modes,
a scoreboard. It's got a whole scoreboard
for one. I've seen like a lot of people making fun of that comparison, but to me, I actually think it's quite apt. You know, like I was there on the subreddits, on, you know, the gaming subreddits at the time, and people were genuinely pointing fingers going, look at what we got with Battlefield and look at what they're doing with Halo. Look how solid Halo is. So I can see them certainly bringing it up as a comparison. I think, you know, if they are saying it's Halo's fault that we were received so poorly, I think that's obviously a step too far. But I think it is worth making a comparison internally between Halo and what that got right in Battlefield and what that got wrong. Because I think there's a really interesting thing that Henderson writes up where he's talking about DICE shipping the game with bugs that were in the parameters of what DICE had shipped before. You know, it was Battlefield 5, Battlefield 4 and stuff. And they were like, that probably wasn't good enough, you know? And it's like, yes, you should have learned that a long time ago. You should have learned that, you know, delivering a game with this amount of bugs wasn't serviceable with Battlefield 4, wasn't serviceable with Battlefield 1, wasn't serviceable with Battlefield 5. To me, those are the lessons you should have learned a long time ago, but at least they're learning them now.
Because there's like the wider thing of, you know, the whole conversation around what Battlefield 2042 is to the core as a shooter, like the potential reliance on like hero mechanics, like the way that they change the dynamics of what Battlefield is in 2042. It seems like it's a way wider problem that obviously in conversations like this, when you've got the executives just sort of going like, well, clearly it's because of this, and they do obviously cite the pandemic as well, it's going to affect the turnaround of development and things like that, but there is that wider sort of idea that, you know, DICE themselves weren't able to put together what fans would have wanted across the board anyway. Like, it is this sort of, like I said, cobbled together chasing trends shooter, which we've seen for the last few years. Nearly everyone seems to be trying to do a hero shooter at some point to try and be the next Overwatch or whatever it is. But Benro, what do you think? I know that me and you both played the trial back when it first came out, but what do you think watching this unfold?
I mean, I'm in the nicest ways, like, scrim, you made a bad game and you released it in a bad state. Like, I get, like, you always got to take that a pinch of salt, like all these people that worked hard on it and they probably didn't want this thing pushed out the door. But when you release something like that, like playing that for like 3 hours on the EA sort of pass thing, I'm so glad I didn't waste money on this thing. Like, just like not having you can hark on the not having a scoreboard forever, right? But that's just a weird thing not to have in, essentially. Not having like the voice chat, we can go back to that altogether. But playing the game, I found, just wasn't fun. And like, it's great having a massive map, you know, like, But when you've got to spend it felt like half an hour, probably more like 5 minutes to get somewhere. And then you've got some old like Jimmy up in a tree somewhere, pop you in the head once and oh, well, you've got to respawn. Now you could say that comes down to me maybe and a bit bad, but like other games, even when it felt like you were in the combat a bit more, there's like a ship in the yard level, mm-hmm. it still just felt not there. And the wider sort of like deserts be covered in sand or this, I think it's Siberian like landscape, they just felt too barren and just like, why can't I just get into it even quicker? And I know there's like squatterfall and stuff, but that compared to Halo is like, just, I would say Battlefield, the newest one, is terrible. And I would say, even though Halo had like its missteps along the way, mm-hmm. like I've almost put like what, six human days into that game now. So there's a difference.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm over 100 hours in Halo. I feel like that's my catchphrase at the minute, but I am over 100 hours in Halo Infinite because I just absolutely lived on that thing. Whereas Battlefield, I did the free trial with a view to get it. Like, I thought they nailed the marketing and I was like, oh, it's going to be this big, anarchic, over-the-top version of Battlefield, which you can argue isn't necessarily what Battlefield is,
we
but
should
whatever.
Say- Yeah. That trial was basically the full game as well. It wasn't just like some sort of like half.
Yeah.
It wasn't some handicap version. It was pretty much the entire thing. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't think our perspective is even like shaken by it being the free trial. Like when, you know, you might.
No, I mean, that's the thing. It almost illuminates just how little was there to pull you along. Like you get the free trial version and you feel like you've seen all of it in just a few hours. I know that like Josh, you liked it more. And it's not that there aren't positives to it, but like, I guess in a view to improve, do you think that, because it's EA, do you think they'll just move on to the next thing, which we've kind of heard of like in the background anyway, or do you think this actually will get sorted?
I think they will, just because of the structural changes that they've made behind the scenes already. Like, they've already came out and said they're committed to Battlefield. They've already set up more series to expand the lore of 2042. You know, they brought in Vince Zampella from
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On to come in and try to steal the entire franchise, so it now has a new like lead creator overseeing it. Just, I don't think it's going to be saved anytime soon. I think it's going to be like a long process. It's not a game or even a series at this point that can be saved overnight, but they are clearly committed to it. It's just kind of like a cyberpunk thing of is it too little too late? You know, we know that they're committed to it, but they should have been committed a year ago when they were planning on releasing this game to begin with. You know, there are so many games games now, especially from EA, that have like shipped and released and then they've scrambled after the fact. But, you know, looking at this and looking at something like Anthem, I don't think this is going to be an Anthem just because of how much they have committed to it behind the scenes at this point. That they are having these conversations to begin with, I think bodes well. But obviously, that's not much of a plaster to the fans who, you know, bought in for the Ultimate Edition and now are like, well, there's not going to be any content until summer.
Yeah, I also wonder how much they have to change, like, at the core. Like, do they try and make the hero stuff more optional? Do they try and get it back to how it used to be? Things like that.
Well, they mentioned that in this report and previously when they've released the New Year patch notes and what they're going to do instead of pushing that season of content out. And they mentioned, you know, stuff like specialists. In this report, they mentioned stuff like adding things to the map so it's not as sparse and so it flows better. It's just a case of them delivering on that and how long it's going to take them to deliver that. Mm-hmm. And whether anyone's going to care when they do, you know, it's already hemorrhaging players. Are people even going to want to give it another chance in so, 5 months' time or whatever?
It's so weird.
When was the last time the game's previous ended up with more players than the new game? Like, that might have happened with like a Modern Warfare where like, when you have sort of like Ghosts came out or things like that, or like I don't know what the newest Call of Duty is now, but like, when's the last time so many people went back that even the people that make the cheats that break these games have given up on this Battlefield because not enough people are playing it, so they've gone back to like making the cheats for the previous games. Like, even when you get to that level, it just seems a bit pathetic in a way. It's just
the thing a fascinating thing though, because like you've got they insist on doing. I mean, not necessarily in Battlefield's case, it's not as sequential or cyclical as Call of Duty, but you have all these like games as a service that start overlapping. But they have to make sure that the latest version is worth the full price. If that isn't the case, then the fan base just sticks with the one they've already bought, and the whole thing falls apart.
I would say it can be done, but like you're saying there, you know, it's so difficult, and you need to put in the effort, and you need to convince people that it's worth it. I think DICE did it with Battlefront 2. I think we saw it with Rainbow Six Siege, which actually initially launched quite rocky. You know, that had a lot of bugs and a lot of glitches to begin with, and now it's like one of Ubisoft's biggest, most profitable things that just continues getting players. Obviously, stuff like Destiny 2 has called players back, but it's whether or not EA is going to put the work in. And I think because it's DICE and they have done it before with Battlefront 2, that they could do it again. But it's just, you know, it's a case of how many times can they do it? How many times can they release a game and then have to make this uphill battle to claw people back? Like, that shouldn't be how... That's not a good way to run a business.
The thing is as well, I feel sorry for DICE because they clearly have a lot of incredible like coders. Like, they have an incredible art department. Like, their games look absolutely stunning. It's just it's the tail end of development that always gets sliced off. So they have all this potential promise and it never comes together. Like, Battlefront 2 got there eventually. And I would say is maybe the best Star Wars game ever made, like, overall. Like, there's a lot of stuff up there. But it's definitely up there, like, you know, Knights of the Old Republic,
multiplayer
whatever.
Star Wars game, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, like, as like an overall, like, here's a chunk of Star Wars you can go play. Like, I think it nails the vast majority of that idea. But it took years to get there. So I kind of, as you know, for me, like, in Star Wars case, or Battlefront's case, there was a lot more impetus to give them the resources necessary because the trilogy was still rolling out. And so if you could go down a cold, hard business route, it made more sense. Whereas Battlefield, I wonder if they, because they're making statements like this, I know they're putting stuff out there to try and improve it as well. But yeah, I wonder how much of that game's core needs to be changed and whether the name is too tarnished or whatever. But we'll see. Next news thing is the BioShock movie coming to Netflix, which is us three have not talked about this with each other yet. But this came from the Hollywood Reporter. Apparently, Hollywood's been trying to make a BioShock movie since 2007. Apparently, when the game first took off, various Hollywood studios tried to get this project off the ground with Gore Verbinski attached to it. I guess he was Pirates of the Caribbean back then. He was a big old deal. And so apparently, there was a version that was going to be put together by Gore Verbinski, but he wanted to push for an R rating. Sorry, the studio and wanted an R rating, and they wanted a big old budget, and the ends couldn't be met on that in that regard. So it's taken this long for it eventually to come back around. It's going to be coming to Netflix, but no people are attached to it. Ken Levine's not mentioned at all in the write up whatsoever. But what do you guys think? I just did a confused face at it, which I tend to do at most passive adaptations of active entertainment. But I don't see the point in this whatsoever. What do you guys think?
You know, I like it. You know, I'm going to come down on this side. Really? I'm actually looking forward to it. Of course I am, man.
The main point of BioShock isn't going to work. The main crux isn't going to work.
Explain.
You fundamentally
please.
Need to interact with it for the big twist to make sense. Like, BioShock as a game, as in terms of the final big twist, fundamentally uprooted video game storytelling and interactive storytelling. And like, you can reduce it down to a passive version of that. But I was like, you're gonna miss the point of it. Like to me, anyway.
I think you can adapt it for a movie. Like you could just the character could
make
just
it worse.
Say,
yeah.
Mate, could you do that? It's like, yeah, sure. And then do that a few times and then get a golf club out of the end. That's Bioshock, isn't it?
I still think it works as a twist. I think like you said, it is diluted because you're not interacting with the would you kindly thing, but I still think that would work as a twist. And I think that you can actually just do a lot more than just the twist. Like to me, it's funny, man. It's funny how our brains work because you said that there. And when I thought of a Bioshock movie, I didn't even think about them directly adapting the first game with that twist in mind. Like to me, I was kind of wondering how they would adapt it. And I think it would be interesting to even go before the first game starts, maybe, you know, like properly see Rapture as a city and how it crumbles. I think there's a lot of interesting political intrigue in there. You can see how these factions, you know, rise up and go against each other. You can see the proper downfall, and then maybe we could have the actual plot of the first Bioshock game play out in a kind of, you know, a proper fully post dystopian version of the thingy. But for me, yeah, I kind of didn't even assume that they would be adapting the first game beat for beat. I thought they would just take the lore and spin their own thing out.
Yeah, I hope that is what they do. For me, it's just Bioshock represents this fundamental pivot in the advancement of video games as a medium, as an art form. So to go anywhere near that is to assumedly borrow some of that. And so I just went, why? But I guess I'll see. The actual lore, like you said, is fascinating, and the wider world of Rapture and all the different conversations around art being like run loose and how that sends some people psychotic. I think there's a lot of potential. They could do a lot of cool stuff with that. Benro, what did you think of the whole thing?
I mean, I like the Resident Evil movies, so we can take that open to sort there. It's not going to take
away from
the games.
I love the original ones too, yeah.
And I've been paying for Netflix for over a decade, it feels like now, so it's just going to fall into that pouch of content that I'll sort of like go in there and see what's laying about when I'm not watching Seinfeld. So, yeah, I mean, like, go for it. I wouldn't mind seeing some of this stuff in live action up there and just seeing how Tom Holland looks as a big daddy. Like, I can't wait for him to sort of like take on that role, and Mila Jovovich being one of the little sisters, like just get the dream casting in and we should go for it. But I'm indifferent until I see things happening, because like, I think there was a time period a long time ago when we had all these movies and projects, they were announced.
That's so funny you mentioned that. That's what I was just about to say.
And we had, I think, a lot of this stuff was announced like a long time ago when we were all still in education, and it's all now starting to come to fruition. So it's quite weird, but I mean, we're getting there at this point. So content is needed.
That was going to be my next talking point, because it's weird. Like, all of these sort of late 2000s movie and TV projects are finally happening. Like, the Uncharted's obviously just came out. Halo is going to become a Paramount TV show. Splinter Cell's going to be adapted into something. Mass Effect got picked up. Yeah, Last of Us. Obviously, Last of Us a little bit later, but there was that whole chunk at the end of the 2000s, especially Uncharted and Halo, that were being bandied about for so long. And now we're getting the likes of Bioshock as well. And obviously, if you read that report, it says that Bioshock would have been one of those things that got talked about back in the 2000s. It just didn't get that far along. Josh, what do you think has changed in the air? Why are we getting these things now?
I think just the way that we are delivered content has changed. You know, before it would have to be a movie. Like, you couldn't make a Bioshock TV show in the late 2000s, because TV at that point, yeah, we were getting some good stuff, but we weren't seeing the cinematic flourishes that we're seeing now with the likes of The Witcher or Game of Thrones or the upcoming Lord of the Rings series. Like, now TV is at a place where, you know, it competes with movies from a production standpoint. And I just think that's allowed video game adaptations in particular a bit more life, and more importantly, a bit more creativity. You know, they're not going to be, hopefully, these kind of like watered down versions of the game made for mass market audiences. It's not going to be a Prince of Persia. It's not going to be even the Resident Evil movies, which I also like, but were definitely different from the games. You know what I mean? And I think Netflix in particular has found that people respond to video game content. You know, I hate calling it that, but that's how they view it. You know, like The Witcher did so well. Castlevania, people absolutely
love. Oh my
God,
Castlevania. Yep.
Yeah. And they've greenlit like a bunch of other stuff now. And I just think they found that people want this content. It's not being done justice anywhere else. And I think they're just more, and they've got obviously, you know, unlimited resources being Netflix. So I think they're just more willing to take a risk on it in a way that the big studios kind of cautiously committed to in the late 2000s, then kind of got squeamish when they looked at the budget, looked like it would have to be an R rating, you know what I mean? Mm. The way that streamers, I don't think, are as beholden to.
The thing is, like, it's interesting because the biggest successes in adaptations have worked in animation, because for me, animation can stay closer to the overblown aesthetic or the overblown gameplay or whatever of a video game. Like, Arcane is phenomenal, Castlevania is phenomenal, Dota is great. Like, they work as a one-to-one analog in a way, or a closer one-to-one analog, than the likes of Uncharted. Like, Uncharted is, I mean, it's selling very well, but critically it's apparently bombing. I've not seen it yet, but it seems like a bit of a mess. Halo didn't exactly light us on, you know, we could sort of look to Halo and went, that's the most synthetic version of this IP that you could have done. So I guess I'm curious whether it like something like this looks like another hyper clean thing, because it needs to, you know, be mass market. And I wonder just how much of the original's identity gets watered down in that process.
I just say it doesn't take away these adaptations, like it doesn't take away from things, but you triggered me when you said Halo, because I remembered people are wielding AK-47s in that Halo trailer. I was like, there's no AK.
Alternate timeline, Ben Roy. It's what they've done. The Covenant love the AK-47.
It's just like some dude holding a VSS in the Book of Boba Fett. I'm just like, why did you spray paint that silver and thing? I went, Lois!
There is that. I mean, as well, like, there's the newest Resident Evil movie that no one talks about, because that thing just came and went so fast that played it very safe and then didn't catch on either.
This is going to make for another interesting kind of discussion, I think, if we ever get to it, because that Resident Evil movie, like, for me, is worse than the other ones. And the other ones are bad, 100%. But they were at least entertaining. But this Resident Evil film kind of made the mistake of being, like, quote unquote, for the fans. Like, it tried to stuff every kind of recognizable thing. Yeah, itchy tasty. Every kind of recognizable thing from Resident Evil 1, Resident Evil 2, parts of Resident Evil 3, parts of Code Veronica. You had so much stuff that was just chucked in there and skimmed over and not done justice. And it was almost worse than them throwing it out, in my opinion, because if they throw it out or they kind of dilute it so far, it almost becomes its own thing. But I was watching that Resident Evil movie just thinking about the wasted potential in a way that I never did with the Paul W.S. Anderson ones. At least there I could be like, well, it's different and I could shut my brain off and enjoy it. This, I was reminded with every single thing they threw to kind of bait me into the movie that they weren't doing it right, that they weren't using it right.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the biggest positive of Castlevania is that it has very little to do with the games. Like, they are pulling characters, they're pulling certain story beats, but for the most part, you know, I forget the name of it, Warren Ellis, who wrote it, but didn't play the games. Like, he, like, knew bits and pieces, but he put it together after that. And that same with Arcane. Like, it's like, you know, those characters are kind of in the games, but not really, not in that capacity anyway.
Let's not forget the Mortal Kombat movie, which was actually quite good. I thought Mortal Kombat movie was entertaining, and
you mean the new one or the original one?
The new one, because what they did is they looked at what the great work of Paul W.S. Anderson, and he had a new character, so they brought a new character into that as well to bring some layman's in there. I didn't think it was needed, but I enjoyed seeing the spectacle of that sort of, like, over the top thing in
I can't tell if both of you got together before this podcast and decided to do a bit, because I hate that movie with every fiber of my being.
It's so fun.
No, it's not fun. The whole idea that Jax wills himself to pop arms out. Like, what the hell is that? It just, no. That's not how it works.
Was quite a nice movie. I thought it was like a 3-star film. I think you should watch it if you
there's like
Mortal 5 Kombat.
Minutes of fighting in it, and there's not even a Mortal Kombat tournament. It's
5 minutes.
The worst. Oh, it's terrible, as the French say.
Do you see that bit when he shoots the shotgun in his face and he freezes the pellets? Just Sub-Zero is like a frozen Terminator that can teleport in that game.
The opening is brilliant, to be fair. If they maintained the opening throughout the whole thing, I would have been all over it. But anyway, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Taylor.
If anyone can find a copy of Silent Hill 1 on PS1 cheap, sort me out.
Yeah, give me
a link and I'll buy it. Give me a link.
Yes. And Josh Brown.
Goodbye. Itchy tasty. Goodbye.
We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.